Logged On.
Welcome to Logged On, a monthly podcast from Dazed about all things internet culture, from memes to emerging trends, deep web conspiracy theories, and beyond. I'm your host, Gonzalo Yalchinkaya, and this episode we have not one, but two very special guests, Al and Ruba, who are behind the Instagram account and now internet-focused publication Post Post Post. So I originally came across Post 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 when it was still just a shitposting page, chronicling the digital zeitgeist through memes, covering everything from trend forecasting parodies and NPCs to Barbie and Julia Fox. Essentially, whatever's in pop culture, they've got a meme about it. I highly recommend you check it out. As for their eponymous publication, it expands on this ethos further, featuring the likes of Jack Self and Matt Dryhurst, as well as past Logged On guests by the likes of Shuman Basar, Anna Disnick, and Jack Ritger. Just as some background context as well, Al is behind the Instagram account, and both Al and Ruba head the publication together. They're both currently calling in from New York following the publication's launch party, so congratulations on that. And Al and Ruba, welcome to the podcast. So if last month covered all things aliens, government disinformation, and psyops, this episode we're touching back down to earth to talk all things social media and posting. Or more specifically, I guess I just want to ask the question, is the golden age of posting over? So it almost feels weird like saying this, especially since like me, I'm an internet writer. I'm speaking to two people who go under the alias Post Post Post. But I definitely feel like it's something that's kind of been in the zeitgeist recently. Like, I feel like there's been a definite shift from, say, like 2020, even 2021, during the pandemic, when I guess we were all so like chronically online, to naturally people, you know, going offline again, touching grass. Naturally, the posting has also morphed as a result of that. And I think generally it's an important topic to address and unpack. So obviously in the pandemic, whether we were into kind of memes previously or not, we all became extremely online. We just had to out of necessity. And you could really feel this across all parts of culture, not just social media or the digital sphere, like kind of stepping outside into the real world. We saw this really translate into post-internet fashion with brands like Praying and OG BFF, with their kind of memic slogan t-shirts, to even the music that we were all listening to in the form of SoundCloud rap, hyperpop, Drain Gang's Bladey even scored a Heaven campaign, a Marc Jacobs Heaven campaign. There was all this hype surrounding New York's Times Square, which was dubbed the first ever meme neighborhood. It spawned insane, I won't go too much into detail about it, but it spawned like so many plays, so many think pieces. It was felt from one side of the Atlantic to the other. It was essentially a kind of scene of termly online downtown characters whose existence seemed almost more real online than it did offline, through various kind of Instagram feeds, Substacks, Wormbrain Twitters, and so on. And it's funny, like looking back on, I guess, this subject now with a bit of removal. I remember even last year, I published an article kind of declaring pop culture is dead, long live internet culture. And while I think this is definitely true, if anything, it's more true than ever. Like everything we do now is mediated through the digital. But I do think it's important to take a step back and, you know, kind of interrogate, like, yeah, like the way we post has definitely changed. This has been changing for a while now, but I'd say it's more apparent across the last year. And obviously, we haven't stopped posting, like on Instagram, on Twitter, on TikTok, like everywhere. But I feel like that kind of, I guess what I mean by the golden age of posting is perhaps this kind of era of unbridled shit posting where it really felt like there was this collective force, this collective thrust of people just kind of posting memes online. It really felt like this kind of collective energy that was really kind of turbocharged during, I guess, the pandemic when everyone was chained to their computers. Looking back on it, this is partially the reason maybe we've seen this dwindle is partially down to people going outside, literally having better things to do and having lives outside of their screens. But we've also seen changes in censorship, rules surrounding the algorithm on like platforms like Instagram, which have basically changed the kind of, have added increasing limitations to what we can post online without getting zucked or getting your content deprioritized. In contrast, the content that is prioritized is the type of stuff that feels very promo-led, anything that feels indistinguishable from adverts. And obviously that kind of further incentivizes people to kind of post within those kind of limitations. I guess both of you are so kind of tapped into these things as well. It'd be really great to hear from both of you, like what your take is on all of this. Like, is the golden age of posting really over?
That's a very interesting question. And you said something about how you feel like the internet kind of is experiencing a sort of maybe midification of sorts. And I want to validate that feeling because I don't think you're alone. The internet has become kind of an increasingly miserable place to be. And from, I mean, what is essential to kind of post is to approach it from a place, from an ethos that refrains from maybe casting a sort of pathologizing shadow on the practice of like shit posting or like theorizing it with pathology in mind, and to really kind of avoid thinking of it in those binary terms as like this inherently like nefarious or sick thing or this or something that even comes with political potential. And I think this very binary kind of killed posting in a sense, killed kind of the golden age of posting, or at least is accelerating its demise. And kind of to think about posting, we kind of have to consider, you know, big tech dynamics. We don't exist in a silo because, yeah, it's fascinating to think about how something spreads, like the kind of the DNA of a meme, how it spreads and mutates. But I think what's more interesting is to maybe theorize or look at why things dwindle or disappear, or the very kind of in vogue term, which is extinction online.
I mean, I don't know about like the in terms of golden age and how we define like golden age of posting. I think I see it more as like some kind of age of posting has ended, and maybe we're entering into kind of a new age of posting. And I think it's mainly identified by people caring a lot less about what they're posting, and they. We are generally just, or even I am, way less excited when I post, for example. Like, I remember, like, even just comparing to last year, I would be excited about putting a post out, but right now it's just, like, part of this same kind of doom scroll dynamic where we're all kind of, like, worm-brained. And yeah, so it's just posting has become kind of... unexciting, and just it's always kind of in a way just giving us more room to maybe find a way for posting to become like a more of a critical vehicle in that sense. And I think also part of the reason is like the rules and like the censorship, like you said, especially with like platforms like Instagram and so on. And how also very vague their kind of like community guidelines are, and like people getting shadow banned and all that. I think it really killed whatever was kind of like exciting in that kind of previous era of posting. And right now people kind of feel like, yeah, like our existence on Instagram has kind of just fizzled out and become much, much less exciting. But yeah, I don't know if you guys also feel the same way about this.
Totally. And it's not only felt on like this individual kind of grassroots movement. Apparently, even kind of institutions are struggling to keep things vitalized and stay exciting and keep things alive, essentially, as the opposite of like the death of the meme or, you know, the death of the golden age. So apparently digital artifacts and kind of the larger, you know, the systems that uphold them and in which they kind of operate are at a real kind of risk of constantly going extinct. So a lot of kind of what we do online is, you know, it's not owned by us. We don't own the means of being online. So much of like, there's this new kind of role called new media conservatives, and new media conservators. So they really struggle to keep artworks or digital artifacts created in as recent as kind of the late 2000s functional and relevant today. And I was reading this article by a writer who writes for Art News. Her name is Jo Lanson Tancred. And she wrote a piece this year, which asked a rhetorical question, can a digital artwork outlast a 19th century painting? And again, so much of, you know, working online or working with tech is working with means that don't really kind of belong to us. We're kind of just like users and creators are, you know, vibe farmers, essentially working on kind of massive tech feudalist land, if you will. And these are owned by businessmen, business magnates, and investors. And so the shifting tides of these like policies and economics, and at times, you know, as we witnessed with Twitter and Meta, real personal feuds influence the dynamics of being online. And we saw that with Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, I guess Lizard Boy Gates. So these really determine the future of like creation online and just like being online. So for example, like when Twitter, now named X, that always takes me a second to remember, when it was acquired by Musk, he initially instated new policies and altered a lot of what artist Lil Internet from New Models, shout out, which he calls the physics of social media. So, you know, when Twitter kind of felt the threat of extinction by the creation of Threads. And we saw the dynamics kick start several kind of dynamics there. It was more than just a simple rebrand for Musk. He changed a lot of, again, what Lil Internet called the physics of social media. It includes several, for instance, he included several hours of video. So imagine what that could, you know, mean for how that would change posting, for instance. And then also at the beginning, I remember, you know, what people kind of the terminally online dubbed a Twitter ground zero. And that's when Musk initially put kind of a temporary limit on the number of tweets that users can see each day. And this really kind of invoked kind of widespread backlash. And I myself was kind of influenced by this or affected by it. And I remember just feeling so tempted to, I don't know, go to Twitter HQ and kind of chain myself to the door, a la Laura Loomer, the kind of far right American activist. So yeah, I mean, these real future changes on this quote-unquote topography of tech land, these seriously influence, you know, posting and posting patterns and also access and creation of data. And most importantly, I remember when viewing and tweeting was limited at the beginning of Musk's acquisition of Twitter, I remember just thinking of the ever atrophying effect on the digital archive. So I kept thinking about the digital archive and how we amassed so much from antiquity. And I thought about the very first tweet that was authored by back then the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey. He said something, I think it was March 2006 when it was created. He just tweeted something like, setting up my Twitter, lol, or something like very offhanded like that. But I thought about how had we had like these limiting sort of features, then I just kept thinking about the dwindling kind of archive. So yeah, I mean, sorry, I could go on, so please.
No, I think you touched on a really, really important point there. Like, it's definitely something I've been thinking about a lot recently as well. And for instance, I was talking to Taylor Lorenz a few months back, and she pointed out, like, obviously when Silicon Valley kind of funnels money into something, it almost like feels like the final nail in the coffin, especially. And I think this affected posting in such a way that, I guess, in 2021, Silicon Valley coined the term creator economy, because I guess like mid-pandemic, they realized like, oh, wow, this isn't just some kind of cringe weird thing that's happening. We can actually like monetize this and profit off of it. So I guess like we've seen like in the last like year and a half, 2 years, this kind of like the influence of these corporations on the content we consume. And maybe because of that, perhaps it takes away some of like the former excitement, because it's not coming. Because I think a big reason why, like for me at least, this kind of golden age of shitposting, maybe let's call it, was so great, was because it really, and you touched on this earlier as well, Ruba, but there's kind of like collective excitement and collective, like we're all in this together, and it's coming from like the bottom up. Whereas like nowadays, like corporations are adopting the language of internet culture, the language of memes. And so it almost feels like we've all like become like too aware of what's happening. Like the curtain is too kind of transparent almost. I don't know. Is there, for instance, I also kind of, like, you see, like, a very similar thing happening with, for instance, like, trend cycles on TikTok, which is obviously, like, informed by posting as well, which feeds back into the memes and so on. But again, like, these kind of trends, like, I was thinking, like, in 2020, for example, when all those, like, TikTok subcultures were blowing up, and it really felt like this was coming from, like, the creators themselves. There was, like, this really kind of exciting wave, like, whether you, like, liked it or not, it felt like something really exciting happening. But I kind of look at like what we have now, and it's like, oh, we have like latte makeup or tomato girl summer or like blueberry nails or like whatever the next thing's gonna be. I think there's already like another term, I've already forgotten it. But yeah, like the whole thing just feels so contrived, so kind of like trend forecasty, that yeah, it just feels like the excitement's been drained out of it completely. Like for me at least, like, yeah, with like micro trends and whatnot.
Yeah, I think this is also like part of the thing, like this is why it's exacerbating this kind of apathy towards posting. And I think one of the most interesting things that also have happened like in the last like what 1 year, like 2 years maybe, which is that people stopped saying shit posting, and it kind of started being just posting, like posting kind of became kind of like, and like it's an all encompassing term, but like shit posters, or like who used to identify as shit posters, know when someone says posting that this is what it means. But it's also like there's like some kind of like coded language when someone says posting, and it depends on like which kind of niche you're kind of online with. And I think this is also like part of why I feel like this landscape of posting is changing more from like a content focused post towards like more of like a self-aware posting, like kind of like what happened like with the formalist movement and art, where like, you know, painters or artists or whatever were like, this is a painting and I want you to see it as just a painting, or like the Malevich black square or whatever. And I feel like posting right now is kind of going like in kind of that direction. Like there's this new, well, not new, I've been following them for a while, Instagram account called crisis.acting. I don't know if you guys follow it, but it's just completely unhinged in terms of posting, but it's never really posting memes, but it's posting these just weird snippets of videos of people doing very weird activities, and and just these posts are like always kind of just alluding to this feeling of making you very aware that this is like a social media post. Like, this is the feeling that I get from it. Like, it really wants you to kind of not pay attention to the content itself, but more to the fact that you are watching this thing on your phone. Like, I don't know if you guys get what I mean here.
Yeah, no, completely. It feels like, I don't know if maybe, and I feel like I should like also pause and just kind of maybe like define shit posting as well. probably a bit too late, but yeah, I don't know, but how would you guys define shit posting? For me, I guess it's just kind of this unbridled, like unfiltered approach to just like clogging up a feed with like kind of anti-algorithmic, like non-algorithmically unfriendly content, I suppose. But I don't know, how would you describe it?
I think, yeah, and it's interesting because it's one of the things that we've researched for Post 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 as well. And like, it had so many different like mutations across like internet history. Like, I think the word, like it started as a way to actually say that this post is bad. Like, it's like, this is a shit post, as in this is a bad post. And then people co-opted it to make it more of like something to be kind of like proud of. Like, and then from that, it kind of like just also transformed into this idea of being like anti-algorithm and very kind of just unhinged and loud and so
yeah,
on.
Yeah, the way I would maybe define shit posting is in total kind of Freudian free association terms. So it's free association with every barrier and every layer to sieve through, but yet still coming out completely unadulterated and pure, just brain rot. So it kind of goes through every layer of purification, but ends like there's so many barriers to not author a tweet or not put out a post. It starts from good Wi-Fi down to, you know, actually pressing post, and yet still this unadulterated anti-aesthetic sort of thing comes out.
Yeah, I feel like its ethos is just like intrinsically, whether it's actually deep fried aesthetically or not, I feel like if like using like deep fry as like the verb, maybe, I don't know, is that's how I kind of associate it emotionally in my brain. But I'm digressing though. To go back to your point, Al, like, yeah, I feel, I don't know, like maybe if kind of 2016 to like 2020-ish, like memes or kind of posting really carried this kind of political potential. And it really felt like, yeah, it could be a form of resistance. That was Politigram, which was like a kind of online, like micro community, I guess, within Instagram of that's where kind of Deleuze and Catboys came from, or all the Mark Fisher memes were spawned during that time as well. Accelerationist memes and all that stuff. And I guess like since like, I'd say like, yeah, 2019, 2020, there has been a shift more towards like a vibe curated, like feeling led, like affect led style to posting where, yeah, like what you touched on, I feel like instead of like there is a form and the form is the meme, but the content itself is more of just kind of like trying to articulate like the weirdness of now, like the kind of like this very like weird feeling of we live in, I know for me at least, like we live in very like unreal times. So here is this, I'm thinking of like NPC influencers, for instance, like yeah. Here is like a series of like ice creams and gang gangs mm-hmm. and like bleep bloops. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't really mean anything on paper, but the feeling it exudes to me as like the user, the content consumer, like it kind of carries that weird feeling. I don't know. What do you both think?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think also, your previous guest and a good friend of mine, Shimon Basar, when he kind of shifted the definition of the attention economy to the distraction economy,
yes.
it kind of like hit the nerve of we're not really watching things for what we're getting out of it. And it's more like just a very kind of this weird subconscious, just looking at things without really seeing them or hearing them. And it's like you said, it's becoming more of like a feeling. And this is why things like those NPC things were going viral. And it's kind of like, in a way, like the, like you said, like what looked like a very kind of critical theory movement that was happening, it just kind of dissipated into this kind of very unthinking online existence. But I also feel like, I don't know why I always just feel like I don't want to have like, I try to avoid like cynical takes as much as possible. So I feel like we still have a lot of these communities that felt very promising, whether it's, but they basically just moved from the big tech platforms, and there is still like so much activity on like Discord servers or like what new models call the dark forest of the internet, and things like Do Not Research, and a lot of like independent publishing kind of platforms, and which do not operate on the same scale, but I think are still kind of carrying that same like sentiment.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just to echo what you said, something that I've observed lately is how maybe we need to start thinking about the impulse to shitpost and how it mutated maybe into a different form of social behavior. So something that I've observed coming up around the leaky corners of the web is a kind of strong return to the anti-hero character online. So it's something that a lot of them are like very committed to the bit, and people kind of reward this through likes and following and sometimes also monetizing it. So there's this account on Twitter, on Instagram. Also, I think they have a very famous YouTube, and it's called OnlyFans Girls Posting Their L's. So it really sort of, what it does is it's run by a big content creator and gamer, and I think also a big YouTuber. His name is James McCultra. And this whole account is premised on compilation of screenshots, videos, and it's just people, or rather just girls, exhibiting completely unhinged, kind of shameless behavior on the timeline. And it quickly started becoming staged L's, so staged like shameless scenarios. So he would monetize this by creating kind of fake scenarios with the OnlyFans models for things like TikTok. And I don't know, but this kind of loss of shame on the timeline kind of makes me not surprised that we enjoy returning to Paris Hilton's self-referential memes, for instance, that feels like it takes us back to a place where we didn't lose the innocence or whatever, like a kind of different time and mode of communication. Maybe in the early 2000s when like the internet wasn't, you know, the preserve of like a select few, and it felt like, I don't know, a little bit more sanitized in a way. And I think then we experienced kind of the opposite of main character. So the kind of the girls posting their L's, or the anti-heroes, the antithesis of like the main character. And back then media was more top down, and we were all just kind of masses on a leveled playing field, and we all together just sort of dissolved into the other rather than becoming micro brands ourselves. And I'm not really romanticizing the flattening of romanticizing like the top down kind of media mode. I'm just kind of, yeah, theorizing that we kind of lost ourselves in the other back then, and we weren't very aware of our brands and virality in that sense, or the network.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like even on like a micro scale, that's happened again, kind of like replicated itself in that, I don't know, like what you were just saying, it just really made me think of like That Girl, like the fact that like it was not everyone's, that's an exaggeration, but like people wanted to be that girl. You had the clean girl aesthetic, you had like all of these very kind of online TikTok led like phenomena, and especially in, I'd say like the last year, it's like we're pivoting away from main girl to NPC, and whether that means that we're all more like checked into like the kind of othered collective unconsciousness, or like digital like motherboard, or I don't know. But at the same time, like, yeah, I feel like it's my instinct to be like, I almost feel like right now, the two things are happening at the same time, all at once, because I feel like now we are all so intrinsically, like, intuitively aware of the fact that we're all personal brands, like, hyper aware, but at the same time, we feel so, like, alienated from it all as well, that, like, we also all just feel like NPCs who are maybe, like, emulating the algorithm, like, turning ourselves into little zeros and ones to do its bidding. Again, I don't know how much this relates to our posting tendencies, but...
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I'm having, like, a hear me out moment. Where,
like, go on.
Okay. But, like, it's just, like, what if this kind of, like, general disinterest and just lack of excitement when it comes to posting or performing our personal brands, and which is like kind of also very irony poison slash filled. What if it is some kind of like acceleration to like the demise or the end of like Web 2 era big tech kind of corporations? Like, I think that they kind of like built their algorithms on just people posting wins, and now, like Rebo was saying, it's cool to post L's and just identify it as a flop. I think, like, what if like we've arrived at a new praxis, you know, accidentally.
Totally. I totally hear you on this, because I think the more we experience kind of decline online and the more we feel cagey, because this is essentially what it is. People just feel super cagey that they're kind of acting. I think the more we experience that, we accelerate the demise of like a certain mode of communication, and we enter a new kind of epoch. And not to get very like William Flesser on you, but kind of a chick Brazilian philosopher, may he rest in peace, a real one. He kind of spoke to this ethos as well. So it's like, yeah. I mean, and that's also like the PPP also philosophy. It's like we move away from the mid. What we try to do is we're all about driving that car straight into the wall and experiencing extremes. So in that way, we expose loopholes in a sense.
I mean, I say this all with the precursor that I'm like, I really don't want to even like sound fatalistic, because I think like I completely agree with both of you. And I think if anything, the kind of whatever state of posting we're at the moment, maybe this like flop era, quote unquote, like it does just feel like this is necessary for the next like big thing. I don't know, like it feels like there's always going to be a moment of like stasis before there's kind of like movement and entropy and like growth. And maybe right now that's going to take the form of, I don't know, I guess like one of the examples that came into my head like throughout this conversation, I'm kind of thinking of like a recent viral meme trend. And I guess that was like the Donald Trump like mugshot, which, yeah, amazing, like spawned 1,000 memes, like, yeah, like they were really funny, but like one thing it kind of highlighted for me was like this lack of substance, and this kind of like memeing for meme's sake. And it felt like there was like no kind of driving force behind it. But I'm like, do I think that's necessarily a bad thing? I don't think I actually do. Like, I think it feels like it's like a bridge onto like whatever's gonna happen next, maybe. And I feel like one thing I've definitely observed, and one way that I really see like posting kind of flourishing, is almost like walking back into the real world. And kind of like, obviously we've become so digitized in everything we do. And it's what I've really enjoyed seeing recently, and the way that I feel like memes are really shaping culture in like the last few months, is seeing how we've kind of offloaded this kind of like internet language back into the real world. And there's a whole bunch of artists doing that. You both are doing that through the kind of the very physical publication of Post as well. And yeah, just generally kind of bringing the URL into the IRL, through physical objects. But what do you both think about that?
Yeah, I mean, the Trump mugshot was kind of very also eye-opening for me. Or, well, not really eye-opening. It's just more of just it followed through some kind of like thinking that I had, which was that these kind of like spikes in social media collective awareness tend to have just less and less time being relevant. So like if we compare it to like Pinky Doll, I think that lasted online like 4 or 5 days, where people were like incessantly posting Pinky Doll videos and like all its adjacent kind of content.
The Slavoj Žižek version was my favorite.
Yeah. Robo actually sent me that one.
Honestly, sensational. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, and then the Trump mugshot, like it felt like everyone already knew that there was going to be a Trump mugshot, and everyone consequentially knew that everyone is going to be posting the Trump mugshot and all its kind of infinite variations. But I think what nobody really predicted was that it's going to last for like 24 hours. And then it already became like very old. And like before Pinky Doll, maybe we'd look at like the Ocean Gate kind of submersible sinking thing. It kind of had like a longer lifespan than the Pinky Doll. So I think it's also like just very fun to kind of analyze these things and see that there's like a very kind of clear identification of their time frames. And it's just very telling of like a collective consciousness that's growing online, that is extremely aware of posting and posting mechanisms.
It's interesting to I mean, it's true that we did experience many life cycles and births and deaths online. And I mean, if you were to just look at, you know, the birth of Kanye and Trump shit posting, and then the death of that by deplatforming them, that's kind of an overt example. But yeah, if you want my opinion, thinking about the meme as an organic machine with a life cycle is also really helpful. So the meme itself indeed has died. And I think not just once, but 1,000 times. So rest in peace when it sort of became a bellwether for sort of political engagement or even kind of commercial viability. But I also argue that it was probably briefly kind of resuscitated when, I don't know, I would say Paris Hilton is maybe the last frontier to like giving life or new forms to the to the meme format. Her TikTok is incredibly entertaining. She kind of taps into this meme logic. She understands the kind of the current kind of template, and she heavily codes it with kind of signifiers and scripts. And she's sort of, I guess, third favorite shit poster after maybe Kanye and Trump. But thinking about posting in this kind of within this framework of big tech really dictates that the minute a post is birthed, it already is in the process of sort of dying. And again, as you both mentioned in several occasions, this is not necessarily a lamentable thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, completely. It feels like also like the more information that we're being bombarded with on a daily level, like the information's only growing and growing and growing. And like, as a result of that, like our attention spans, our attention bandwidth per like viral trend per meme is going to like naturally decrease as a result of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also when we, if we look at Trump and Kanye and so on, and I think this also kind of expands this definition of posting, because for example, when Trump, I don't know if you guys if you've seen the video where he had like a t-shirt with his mugshot and he was like advertising it for people to buy it. I think like he doesn't have to like literally post it himself, but just by the act of doing something that is very kind of tailored to exist online, he is kind of like posting. So like posting kind of just also can happen IRL, like in real life. And like, for example, like some of the wild interviews that Kanye was doing after he was canceled, like he used to like put out these kind of like controversial takes because it was like his way of also like still posting, like even though he was like banned on platforms, he was kind of sure that what he says in front of a camera would get posted eventually. So this is also, again, like part of how posting is moving outside of just the tech kind of app, literal app, towards just more of a form of expression.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see how meme logic kind of permeates different fields or sort of is apparent in real life. So for example, fashion, there's a TikTok that's super interesting. It's called Subway Sessions. It's run by a digital creator. Her name is Christina Abakayan. And what she does basically on her TikTok is put together wild outfits, weird concoctions. And, you know, sometimes it hits, sometimes it misses, but that's kind of besides the point because, you know, what's being done here is an awareness of virality, awareness of the network and performing for that network. And it's really, when you see her, it's really hard to not view her as just a devirtualization of basically a fried meme.
I love that. No, I need to check that TikTok out. I'm familiar with it. But yeah, I really like this idea of kind of reframing and kind of taking a step back from maybe like the formal definition of posting into something a bit more fluid. And yeah, like now, like I'm glad we're having this conversation because yeah, I'm like, is the golden age of posting over? Like, actually, I don't think so. Like, I think posting in, like, maybe, like, the kind of quote-unquote capital letter, like, P-posting, maybe. But even that, I'm, like, kind of tempted to just say it's evolving into, places beyond the very, like, limiting platforms that we have available at this moment. Like, I guess going back to the digital, though, like I know that you both touched on Web3 earlier, or at least like the kind of graduation away from these very kind of homogenous, big like Web2 platforms like Instagram or Twitter, X, whatever. How do you see posting kind of evolving away from those? And even like places like Discord as well, which like I definitely feel has like a place. But again, I also feel like that's dwindled slightly as well.
I can't claim to know like the how this is going to kind of transform. But I think there are definitely signs of change happening. And we've seen like, I think this was like last year, also some of it this year. Many articles like declaring the death of Instagram or declaring, of course, we know Facebook has been dead a long time ago. And
RIP.
I actually have like a small prediction where I think Facebook might become cool at some point where it's like it becomes this.
Oh my God, do you think it's going to be like Tumblr?
Yeah, like some weird horseshoe effect. Wait,
bring back Facebook. I feel like disgusting saying that out loud, but
yeah. And I remember reading an article that Ian Bogost wrote for The Atlantic. I don't remember the exact title, but it was kind of like Instagram is dead, and it like the visual was like the Instagram icon with like a spider web on it or something. It was basically talking about how he kind of made the point that whoever people like founded these Web2 big tech kind of platforms, he essentially said these were nerds, and nerds by definition don't have like a lot of empathy, or they're not extremely connected to the culture, and they tend to view everything kind of in a very like quantitative, statistical manner. And this is basically how they make their decisions. And it's like, if they have the data, they're taking the decisions based on it, and so on and so forth. And while I do think like there is some truth to that. I think also what we've seen was more like just market capitalism just taking hold over like these decisions. Like ultimately, if this claim that the people making these decisions are making them based on data, so it's still like based on what people actually do, even like subconsciously or in a way that is not like critical or thinking about their decisions, and which really just connects to the point of doom scrolling and being completely apathetic about your existence online. And it's just like this kind of dopamine hit that you do, just you wake up and your phone is like, you keep like hitting your pillow to find where the phone is, and you open Instagram and you find out like you didn't get as many notifications as you would have expected. And yeah, but basically I feel like the maybe the hype around Web3 has kind of fizzled out, but I might want to believe that this could be like a positive thing, so that this kind of next phase gets kind of built without the pressure of hype, so that it kind of just can become more of like a more functioning alternative. Ultimately.
Yeah, and I would just add to that is that, yeah, I completely agree that it's hard to predict or say with finality what the next stage is. But I think we'd really benefit from thinking of this whole thing as an organic apparatus with like a life cycle, a birth and death, because it's also really helpful to not think of it in a linear manner, because I mean, there are pockets of the internet that are experiencing a golden age and others that are, you know, just a mid bronze age, while others are complete kind of collapsology vibes. So it's like, it's kind of nonlinear. And if you think about Facebook, for instance, it's so well and alive in Egypt, and Al can attest to that, while it's totally dead in other parts of the world. And then Snapchat, for instance, unheard of in like in the West, I would say, but in Saudi or in the Gulf, the Arabian Gulf, it's so popular. And so, yeah, we would benefit a lot from thinking of it in nonlinear kind of terms.
Like, I definitely felt it when Skibidi's toilet came out, like that kind of deranged, hellish toilet animation that was going viral a few months back. And that really kind of prompted a lot of discourse around like Gen Alpha. And there was like a few memes being like, oh, Gen Z is a new cringe generation. There's a new generation coming up, like whatever. I think essentially, like, I really try not to deep these things too much on one hand as well, because I'm like, okay, like this new humor, if that's what we want to call it, or this new form of posting is literally 10-year-olds. So it kind of makes sense in that regard that we are just seeing like these weird hellish toilets take over our feeds. But I guess one thing that I'm interested to see, and I guess this almost kind of goes back to the very like origins of memes themselves, is like these carriers of like collective feelings, fears, desires, anxieties, whatever, and how that's especially going to maybe develop, evolve in like this very kind of AI fueled kind of age that we're entering now. Like as like the biggest breakthrough since like I would say social media. I think that's quite commonly like accepted, or maybe even bigger, we don't know yet. But yeah, I guess like I'm also very interested to see like how that's going to unfurl, and we're already seeing like so many examples of that already through all the weird shit we're seeing online in recent months.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say I'm a bit disappointed with Gen Alpha. Like
those 10-year-olds.
Yeah, those damn 10-year-olds. I don't know. I feel like Skibidi toilet thing was kind of like, I don't know, it was these similar like kind of absurdist, surrealist, 3D, you know, bad aesthetic looking visuals were kind of like also like a millennial humor back in like 2016 or 2017. So I like when people were posting about how this is Gen Alpha humor, I had a feeling like maybe they're just they're trolling us. Like, they want us to think that this is their kind of humor, but it's really not. Like, I don't know.
It's a generational psyop.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, and I like this thing. I don't even know if what I'm going to say is like a boring point now, but I guess like if I'm to like really break it down even further, I guess like one thing that I can kind of foresee like change the face of at least like online posting is just the tools that we use to create said posts. Like, I guess like we all grew up like very like digitally native, but like Gen Alpha completely, like, they've not had any kind of memories, yeah, like any semblance of a memory, a distant memory of any of this beforehand. And I guess they're all very equipped, like they've grown up with TikTok, having all this equipment available to them, they've grown up playing video games, they know how to use video game engines to create like said content as well. So I guess just like maybe the form I'm interested to see kind of develop in the coming years, at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to kind of round things off, I know we've just talked about whether the golden age of posting is over or not, but just from a kind of curious standpoint, I would love to know, what are some of your favorite meme accounts?
Oh, I could go on for...
Maybe if I say, like, list your top three meme accounts that people should check out.
Okay, so I think I'm going to start with crisis.acting. This is currently, and has been for a couple of weeks, my favorite. If I want to... There's also a guy, or I don't know, sorry, to gender. I don't know the... their gender. There's also Lo-Fi Marx, and also I'm trying to remember, there's Cabron Fiber. He only posts memes on his stories, but like, so worth the follow. And I'm sure there are more, but yeah, Roba, if you want to take over, and then if I remember anyone else.
Yeah, I'm kind of pressed to think of, but I have maybe two that I absolutely have to check, which is obviously OnlyFangirls posting their L's. But then also there's another one called Arabs with Identity Issues. And I honestly would not recommend that you check it today on 9/11, but maybe some other day.
Yeah, those are some great recommendations. I will be sure to check them out. But thank you both of you so much for joining the podcast. This has been a really, really enjoyable conversation, and it's great to have the kind of opportunity to speak to you both as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting us.
And this is Logged On. Thank you for listening to this episode. Be sure to like, subscribe, follow, listen wherever you listen to your podcasts, and we will see you for the next episode.
Logged On.